So I will start with your lecture, and you will talk about the archiving of media art, if we can generalize this. So because I'm generalizing now, I'm talking about media art, I would like to ask you for the beginning, like, how can you define, or how can we define media art nowadays?
Yeah, well, my lecture, which I guess will be more of a talk, it won't be like a really very formal lecture, is about some of the notions of, let's say, cultural instability that's connected to what we call media art. I'm not actually a very big fan of this expression, media art. I don't myself know exactly what it means. I prefer to look at art and to look at art in a number of different, let's say, technological contexts. So, of course, there's video and there's net art and other types of, let's say, more complex interaction work, and the kinds of things that are happening here at Ludmila, which I guess in some way is this thing about electronic media art. And the specific context of the talk is more oriented towards the history of video, let's say, and the role that video also played in defining and creating histories, particularly in Central and Eastern Europe, after the various revolutions and changes of powers 20 years ago, and the way also that kind of technology as a broadcast technology was a very different way of dealing with transformation of society as, let's say, film or photography was. It was the very, let's say, inherently political nature of video as a broadcast medium.
So you have like connection between to video. You were working for video festival. What I call media art. How it developed from video and other art practices?
I think there's a lot of kind of parallel historical developments and stuff. And of course, the artistic context that video art existed in, let's say, in Slovenia back in the times of federal Yugoslavia, was radically different, of course, than, let's say, in Poland or certainly the Soviet Union, where it was completely forbidden to even touch a camera. For the reasons of, if you've got access to that kind of technology, then you've got access to power, because you can distribute your message in ways that, let's say, traditional film culture can't. But Slovenia had a different scene that was somehow more in tune with, the politics of broadcasting than in other places. And the work that I was doing in Germany, in Dessau, in the 1990s and the early 90s, that, let's say, started, let's say, began with a video festival, wasn't even so much that we were specifically interested directly in video per se, but that was the medium of expression which most directly related to the, let's say, the issues of societal transformation that we became interested in. So actually we were doing basically an urbanistic and architectural project in Dessau, in Eastern Germany, and we got interested in the role that these broadcast media were playing in the various political revolutions and transformations, especially, of course, the TV revolution in Romania in 1989. So we wanted to, I guess, at that time, from a more naive point of view, to get more of an understanding of the, let's say, the cultural mechanics behind this, and also the move from filmic tradition to taking video on, and whether that was kind of like touching the forbidden fruit and sort of newfound freedoms of being able to manipulate your own artistic expression without having to have huge armies of people and resources to do that. So this festival that emerged from it, that at first was a video festival, but very quickly turned into a festival for a broad range of electronic media expression, was originally going to be a small symposium to which maybe 10 or 12 primarily filmmakers mm-hmm. from Eastern Europe were going to be invited to talk about this phenomenon. But as soon as we started looking at sort of what's going on out there and sending out calls, we got huge feedback from all kinds of artists all over the place doing all kinds of things. It was all very new at that time. So there was a connection to newfound freedom and working with this medium of a video in 91, 92, 93 that was very exciting and very fresh and completely different kind of thing than the way electronic media and technology was experimented with, let's say, in the West or Western Europe or North America, where there had already been a long tradition of robotics and computer art and so the complexity of media art already existed to a certain level in other places, but the form of expression, the raison d'être for using video as a means to communicate an idea was, let's say, socially and politically completely different in Eastern and Central mm-hmm. Europe, and that's what was interesting for us.
But what was the difference between Yugoslavian scene, which was kind of developed in its own way, and Eastern European scene? You said in Eastern Europe everything was forbidden, but there were probably I've seen some works from the 80s, for instance.
Yeah. Not everything. I mean, that's, you know, the problem about these things is that you always get into, you know, forced into these generalizations. So there were different levels of access and using video like other, let's say, more complex technologies often was a question of how you have access to what kinds of infrastructure. And Yugoslavia had this fantastic youth art and culture network that was also connected to the sport clubs. And sport clubs were also using video for training and this kind of thing. And there was the youth clubs were also part of the ideological apparatus of the state in a very different way than in let's say classic behind the Soviet Iron Curtain, where there was a much more restrictive regime in terms of the ways in which even youth culture was allowed to disseminate itself, where things were much more underground, let's say. But for sure, I mean, Hungary also had a very open artistic scene, and I mean, some of the greatest pioneers of video and electronic media are coming from Hungary from the 1970s. So again, it's a different kind of artistic context, I suppose, as well. But in Poland, for example, it was definitely an issue. It was definitely a problem. And artists like Józef Chłopakowski, who were one of the few who were playing with, let's say, or experimenting with video, you know, were doing it very much kind of, you know, in their own apartments, you know, sort of with friends kind of thing. Although what they were doing was relatively innocuous, but the fact of having possession of this equipment that the state uses for its own control over the population was often problematic. And in the Soviet Union, it was almost unheard of. So of course there were varying degrees of access, but one thing that, let's say, covers, I would say, the whole area, whether it's in Yugoslavia or in so-called Eastern Europe and Soviet Union, was that the work with these media, with technology, with broadcast media, always had quite a political connotation, which was not necessarily the case in the West, where there was often there was technology first, and then you look at ways of using it for certain kinds of creative of expression. Often the case was that in the East you have a story to tell, you have a necessity to express something in a certain way, which in many cases had to be expressed through this very specific and an often political type of medium.
Art production from Eastern Europe, is it still more politically engaged than Western European or American art?
Well, my personal opinion is no, and that's neither good nor bad. Mm-hmm. It's just the times that we're in. I don't think anymore at all in terms of this sort of East-West scenario. You know, the Ostrenenje project that we did was very specific in terms of giving a platform to emergent artists and artistic scenes in Eastern and Central Europe, and actually to really work at kind of integrating systems and people and platforms between East and West. And one of the reasons that I ended the Ostrenenje project, it was never meant to be a festival that would go mm-hmm. on forever and ever and keep pushing this East-West thing, was that I felt that, you know, 10 years after the change, you know, we're beyond this East-West vocabulary, you know, the structures are there for ease of communication and movement and all those kinds of things, which were still difficult and restrictive. And once the Yugoslav problem mm-hmm. was more or less over, that also started to, you know, create a more open system and more open platform. So what I'm interested in now, and I think that's what's the strength of organizations like Ludmila, is really looking at all forms of technology as open systems for artistic expression, and to really create, you know, these more universal and international forms of artistic expression, so that the media itself, the technology, and the artistic expression is not necessarily tied to one or another political identity, but that it's really a free and open form of artistic expression.
But also like creative commons or like all sure. open source technologies are some kind of political statement probably nowadays.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think there's always some connections to the way in which we manipulate media, because they are very much intrinsically tied to how we communicate, and that has a political aspect to it, mm-hmm. and we want to keep channels of communication open. But those aren't things which are in any way specific to East or West or North or South. They're
global,
common issues, and so the scenarios where, let's say, the old forms of let's say tactical media that we were looking at in the 90s, where they still have application, where it still has some sense in terms of overcoming political issues and political problems, are, you know, let's say in Belarus and in other parts of the world, where there's still you know, repressive and restrictive regimes in terms of information control. It's become a more, let's say, global issue or global struggle or something like that, but not anymore in that old Cold War jargon. It's actually pretty amazing, you know, living in Berlin, how 20 years after unification and 21 years after the fall of the Berlin Wall, that people still have this very sort of clear image of East and West and the separation of the two places, and tourists still come in droves to Berlin, you know, looking for the Berlin Wall and you know what that was.
Looking for a romantic experience, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you think about it, let's say in the context of the Second World War, I don't know what it was like, but, you know, I wonder what the world of 1965 was like with relation to 1945. For me, it seems like galaxies apart between those 20 years. But the 20 years after the unification of Germany and the kind of the, let's say, unification of Europe, there's still a very close bond between sort of the times before and the times now, and this process of transformation, and it's something which I'm hoping we can kind of like get out of our, you know, our daily vocabularies. So, doing the Transitland project last year, which I'll be talking a little bit about this evening, was in a sense for me on a personal level, also a little bit problematic, because I didn't necessarily want to kind of like bring up those issues of sort of like the separating factors between East and West. But it was quite interesting to look at that region, so-called Eastern Central Europe, in the year 2009, to look at what kinds of issues, what kinds of problems, have developed there, which are very unique to those places, to those countries, and also a result of the transformation process, a whole, whole different kind of thing in terms of, the way capitalism and market economies have rooted themselves in let's say, unregulated or in the kinds of pretty insane and not particularly sensitive ways, let's say, issues of prostitution in the porn mm-hmm. industry. There's incredible, trafficking of human beings through this area.
So Transitland, it's some kind of video archive or the project for archiving video. Yeah. Can you tell? I mean, I don't specifically know a lot about this project. Can you tell just a little bit more?
Yeah, it's fairly straightforward project. It was like an EU cultural project between a number of organizations in Europe that put an archive of 100 video works that span this period 1989 to 2009 and, mm-hmm. and looked at the role that video played in that transformation process. So they are very much about this notion of transit and transformation in Eastern and Central Europe. Part of the project also included 5 new commissions. Mm-hmm. So there's 5 new works in there, and the result, let's say the product of the project, is a hard drive of these 100 videos in screening quality. So of course it exists as an online database, but the point is that you can borrow or loan this hard drive and make screenings with the works on it without having to sort of chase down all the screening copies, let's say. It's at a high enough uh-huh. quality that it can be used as a screening. And what we have here in Ljubljana is actually the physical so-called jukebox, which is this hard drive with a monitor attached to it. So anybody can come and just watch the works in good, well, the best quality that was available for them, and we did that quite consciously instead of just doing a web archive, which is very limited in terms mm-hmm. of its capacity and its relative instability
videos.
And so on.
Yeah.
In that sense, it's quite straightforward. And there's a publication as well that came out with it that has some essays that kind of look back on this this change and the role also of archiving and defining histories in this region with vis-a-vis the video production. But it was very specific to video and not other forms of electronic or computer or technology-based art.
And then what about Transmediale? Transmediale also came out from Video Festival. As I noticed, it's changed the name in 98, I think, from Video Fest to Transmediale.
Yeah.
Was this time really crucial? I mean, what happened? Why this name was changed? And is this also the change of the concept of the festival at the time?
Yeah, well, the festival, I would say, has been transforming ever since it started in 1988, and the very very first Transmediale, which of course was not called Transmediale, was the so-called the name of it, if I get it right now, was Video Film Festival, mm-hmm. the 18th Forum of Young German Film. Mm-hmm. So that was the title of that event, and it was a sort of a small subsection of the Berlinale Film Festival, the forum part that was dedicated basically to video art. So it has its roots in the video tradition of West Berlin. I have to add that it was, of course, before the wall fell and before unification. And it very quickly, though, became an event that looked at the whole vocabulary of production within electronic media. So video was, let's say, a core element of it, but it very quickly moved to other forms of technological, let's say, unstable media arts, including performance and computer and robotics, and also, of course, started to engage a lot of this form of, let's say, more political and socially driven art and electronic media because of the changes in Eastern and Central Europe. So, of course, being in Berlin, in West Berlin, mm-hmm. As the as the, let's say, 91, 92, 93 came along, I would say the face of Transmediale also shifted quite radically to look at more of these relationships between society and technology. So already by that time, I would say it was a very sort of transdisciplinary and transmedia arts festival. And it took until 1997. It was actually 1997, the first time that they called the thing the Transmedia Festival. Mm-hmm. To reflect this change also in what the festival was doing. And then in 1998, the next year, they made this title Transmediale, which it has ever since then. Mm-hmm. But even this has, of course, continued to evolve. And some years ago, the sub-line of the festival, which was International Media Arts Festival, was also changed to Festival for Art and Digital Culture, which, of course, I think is also quite significant and interesting, because really what we are dealing with is art, and art which we don't necessarily want to categorize in one specific way or another, but it is art which is related to how we exist as a digital culture. Mm-hmm. So I think it much better defines what the festival is about. And it could be that will change again, probably will change again in the future, because, again, we are looking more closely at artistic production within open systems and open cultures and stuff, open web issues, specific purpose.